Up next, though, while the war on drugs may have sounded like a very good idea at one point, the consequences have been catastrophic. One in three adults in the U.S. now have a criminal record, primarily for drug possession. Parents all over the U.S. and Canada are grieving the loss of their children from overdose and mass incarceration. And patients with severe illness or chronic pain are denied access to proven pain medication. We're pleased to be joined on the telephone by a lawyer and expert on drug policy and criminal justice reform. She's also the author of War on Us, How the War on Drugs and Myths About Addiction Have Created a War on All of Us. We're joined on the telephone by Colleen Collis. Colleen, good evening.
It's good to be here, John. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you joining us tonight. How did this war on drugs go from being something that was expected to solve a very serious issue to have such opposite consequences? What went wrong?
Well, I think there were a combination of factors, but many of them were myths about addiction. And when you start with a bottom line fallacy about addiction itself, it makes it very difficult to find solutions that actually work. So since the war on drugs began over 50 years ago, science and medicine has come a long way. So we know a lot more than we did when this whole thing evolved, but it's very difficult to change policy. It changes slowly, and we've got a lot of tradition and a lot of attitudes that need to change in order to solve the epidemic. I think the biggest one is the idea that addiction is a moral failing that should be punished. And we now know if we look at statistically how this has worked, we know that is not a realistic solution. But medicine now tells us that it is not a moral failing. We have medications that cut overdose rates in half, help people who've been struggling with addiction for years to be able to return to normal, productive lives. So when I started looking at that, if we have medications that work that well, then that means that we have people sitting in jail because they didn't get the proper medical care. Mm-hmm. And we're punishing people because they don't have access to medications and other forms of treatment that now have proven to be very effective.
Speaking of effectiveness, if in fact the war on drugs has been ineffective, why are we insisting on continuing with it?
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. One is I think a lot of people are operating out of fear, including parents. We've been told, frankly, a lot of lies and misperceptions over the years that we should let our kids hit bottom, and that it's best to assume that if they feel enough pain, they will change. But there's also fear on the part of our policymakers, because if there's a change made in drug policy, and if there's one person who isn't punished and who does something bad, that can be a career-ending issue for a politician, whereas all of the good that's created with that change in policy, having people's lives not lost to being behind bars or being afraid to come forward for help, and all of those positives don't get reported, but the one negative typically does. So politicians are very afraid of policy changes. In addition to that, the war on drugs is big business. So we have everything from private prisons to private probation to billion-dollar companies that run bail bonds, who keep 10% of the bond, regardless of whether someone ends up being guilty or not. Drug testing companies, video visitation. There's a whole multi-billion-dollar profits being made from the war on drugs, which is typical of anything that goes on for 50 years. But it makes it much more difficult to change.
You alluded to one of the consequences of the war on drugs being the issue of addiction and overdose, this whole epidemic that we are facing, whether it's in your country or in ours. Specifically, give me some examples of the what's wrong with the specific drug policy that is impacting that.
Well, for me, the number one issue is treating something as a criminal justice matter rather than a public health matter puts attorneys and judges, prosecutors, legal professionals in a position of dictating medical treatment for people. And I can tell you, going through law school, I have absolutely no competency based on law school to tell someone what treatment they should or should not have. And in fact, most of the criminal justice system actually prohibits the medications that have proven to be the most effective treatment that we have. But if someone is arrested, even for a probation violation, for missing an appointment, they can be thrown in jail and deprived of all of their medications, putting them through withdrawal behind bars. And then when they're released, they have a lower tolerance rate, so their risk of overdose actually skyrockets. And at the same time, we end up with people being very stigmatized. Criminal records prohibit them from being able to find gainful employment, to find housing. So it makes it very difficult for people to move forward. So it keeps them in their addiction.
Colleen Collis is our guest. She's an expert on drug policy and criminal justice reform and the author of War on Us, How the War on Drugs and Myths About Addiction Have Created a War on All of Us. Obviously, your book focuses primarily in the United States and what's going on south of our border here. Canada being a much smaller country, nonetheless, we are facing similar issues, but correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we've waged the kind of war on drugs that has happened in your country.
Canada has been wiser in many ways. There are issues there. Unfortunately, the United States has exported much of our drug policy, and a lot of that is because of UN treaties that have been promoted historically by the United States. So it makes it much more difficult for other countries to experiment and to determine what really works with drug policies. So there are similarities throughout the world just because of the impetus begun by the United States. One of the chapters in my book actually talks about the legalization of cannabis in Canada and what we can learn from that. Mm-hmm. You're still learning there. It's new in terms of supply and a lot of the regulation, and I'm sure that there will be some adjustment. But there was a lot of wise thought put into the cannabis legalization there. We can learn not only on cannabis policy, but on across the board drug policy. Because when we know at this point that it's not a matter of whether someone is going to have access to drugs. It's a matter of whether they are going to be accessed through street drugs that are often tainted with fentanyl and provided by the drug cartels versus having legally regulated markets. The overdose issues are largely because of tainted drugs. So if we can have ways of being able to regulate not only the quality but the strength of individual drugs, that one step in and of itself would do wonders as far as minimizing the overdose rates.
We clearly do have some growing pains when it comes to the legalization of cannabis in this country, but are there countries somewhere else in the world who perhaps have done this right?
Well, it's actually surprising how many countries have, in the book I do an analysis of all of the different countries and the different techniques that have been used. So we have decriminalization, like Portugal, where the issue with decriminalization is that it doesn't allow it decriminalizes use, but it doesn't decriminalize sales. So you're saying that someone can use drugs, but the person selling those drugs to them is still creating a criminal act, and it doesn't allow the government to be able to supply the substances. So that's the challenge with decriminalization. But a lot of countries have gone to decriminalization again because of UN treaties, and they're a little bit more in compliance than legalization. There's also a lot of places, including some areas in the United States, where we have de facto decriminalization or legalization, where the law enforcement professionals have really come to the conclusion that this is not working and are refusing to make arrests for drug possession, and are instead routing people into treatment programs, housing programs, and those types of things. And some of those policies have really been very effective. The challenge is that there's a lot of luck involved as to what jurisdiction you happen to live in, and whether you're going to, for doing this exact same thing, you may end up with free treatment in one place and a felony conviction in another.
Mm-hmm. I have about a minute and a half left. The subtitle of your book addresses some of the myths about addiction. What, in your opinion, is the biggest myth when it comes to drug addiction?
Total abstinence is the only way to recovery is a huge one, and it has kept us from using a lot of the medical methods of solving the addiction and overdose epidemic. Another big one is that anybody who tries a drug is going to become addicted. The reality is that 10 to 20% of people become addicted, and it's because they have a different physical or psychological makeup. But unless we want to stigmatize anybody who has ever taken any type of drug, we really shouldn't be judgmental of those that end up with addiction issues, because we start out, you know, anybody who's tried a drug has started out in the same place, done the same thing. They just ended up going down a different path.
In 30 seconds, what can individuals do that might make a difference on this whole matter?
Number one, carry naloxone. There is a simple nasal spray that you can carry on your person, and if you see someone overdosing, using that nasal spray will save a life. Supporting overdose prevention sites, also known as safe consumption sites. Canada has been more open-minded to that than the United States has. We're seeing changes here. Offering opportunities for people to have criminal records, whether you're an employer, a landlord, anyone who can offer opportunity. There are a tremendous number of people that have a lot to offer and will be very, very loyal to someone who gives them an opportunity. And just not judging. And that can make a huge difference. The stigma can be the turning point of someone's life as to whether they're feeling stigma or feeling acceptance.
Leave us with your website if folks would like more information.
The website is www.waronus.com. And there are videos and links and a lot more information at waronus.com.
Colleen, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks a lot for having me.
My pleasure. Colleen Cowles is a lawyer, an expert on drug policy and criminal justice reform, and the author of War on Us, How the War on Drugs and Myths About Addiction Have Created a War on All of Us. That website is waronus.com. KW Magazine, 98.5 CKWR.